From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 21st day of November 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. We'll hear from Nebraska pork producer Bill Lucky. I caught up with him at last week's National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. And then as we round out our time, we'll take up the weather forecast too. Today with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather. That's T-Storm.net online. On this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $4.26¾, down 3.5. The March down 3¾ at $4.36¼. And the January beans 12¾ lower at $9.77¾. The March at $9.85¼, 14 lower. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net is now here to discuss what's been happening in the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, the winter meeting season has kicked off. Just very quickly, you will be with us at the iHotel on the 13th for the Farm Assets Conference. That's the first in the Illinois Farm Economic Summit series. Thank you for doing that. By the way, those who want to register can do so on our website at willag.org and find out all the details. What else have you got up for your winter meeting season? I know mine's filled up quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of stuff on the docket coming up here tomorrow. I'll be in Indianapolis, actually, where the Colts play. It's kind of interesting. I've never even been there. But one of the groups that is wanting me to come in, you know, they've rented out a portion of the facility. They're actually having it down on the field. So I'd be much more suited to make a presentation than try to return a touchdown, but it'll be pretty interesting. I'm excited to be there.
Wait, you're going to be on the field at Lucas Field? That stadium is enormous.
Yeah.
Holy smokers.
Yeah. Well, it'll be pretty cool.
That will be fantastic. What are you going to tell them?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's tough right now. I mean, the bean market's just as pathetic as can be at the present time. You really have a hard time rallying this thing without some sort of a South American weather issue. No doubt about it. The stock situation is plentiful for the world, is plentiful for the U.S., yet you had gigantic crush, all-time record crush last month. You know, and so you've got some decent demand, but you've just got so much to chew through on the stocks. I think with corn, you're looking at, a different situation. The corn's struggling to get above that 430 level and stay above it. As far as these is concerned, March, only a 10 cent carry. I mean, in a crop this big, that's not normal. You've got a lot of front end demand this year. You know, you've had bull spreading going on in the midst of a really big crop and big stocks. So it tells you that demand's strong. Farmers been tight fisted, and maybe, Todd, I don't know, but maybe you dial that yield back a little bit again in January. I don't know. Here's the thing. You can tell me, oh, this was an enormous crop, and it was, but you're still, if you went to 182, you'd almost be 5 bushels above the all-time record, you know, that we had. So that's still a huge crop. So maybe we need to start to consider that crop might not be as big as what we once thought. And so maybe you chew into that stocks number just a little bit more. But I still don't think we're going to ever be talking in this marketing year about getting too tight on stocks.
Let's go back to the soybeans. You said it was not a pretty picture. How bad do you think it is?
Well, if you have South American production come through at levels that are currently projected, which range around 170 for Brazil, you're always going to have Argentina in that 50 range. You know, if those are the numbers you come in with, then Todd, I'll tell you what, you're going to have a really hard time keeping beans, you know, to go back to $10 and stay above there. You may be looking at a dollar lower than that. I hate to say that. It's not pleasant to talk about. But at the same time, you've got to ask yourself, what would make these funds switch from wanting to be short beans, you know, to actually wanting to own them? And I'll tell you what, you got a lot of work ahead of you if that's what you want to see happen. So, you know, it's just a really tough situation right now.
This was the crop that most were saying we need to sell beans at fall to pay bills. I don't know how many actually did that. What do you think about that prospect? And is it the crop that you now need to hold?
We were an advocate of selling, of course, well in advance. We thought that some of the beans going across the scale, if you could make them work, it'd be better than maybe commercial storage. But at the same time, beans at home wouldn't be such a bad idea. And especially, Todd, in this case, you know, whenever you're fairly close to a crush plant, because clearly these crush plants have been moving right along, the margins have still stayed pretty darn good. And with that being the case, you can pick up a pretty hot basis here and there if you're in the right type of area. But at this point, if you've got beans, that's the question. Do you want to go ahead and hold on to them? You know, and that's a tough call. I'm not a huge fan of holding on to much more than gambling bushels. Now, you could say, hey, we've done all the damage we can do. You know, maybe that's the case, Todd, but maybe it isn't. You got to be a little bit careful in that thought process, because there are some folks saying that they don't even know if nine will hold beans. I've got to think that if you do make a run for $9, that you would see some pretty strong support there. But at the same time, you know, when you're talking cash beans, I would assume that, and we all know that the growers already sold quite a few. And so maybe there's a chance, you know, that you'll get, especially in a region where there's just not very many beans to buy and the basis does all the work, maybe that would be an opportunity. But, you know, I'm kind of grasping for straws here.
Well, I was hoping you'd grasp for a few more straws. I was thinking that you might have until late December, not very late December, to manage to pull this off. But it feels like you're saying sooner rather than later.
Well, we've got to hope for that. You know, if we get some sort of a Christmas bounce here, it's possible. We've seen it happen before. It's not altogether uncommon to see. But again, you're going to really need a weather issue. Right now, the only one that you can kind of sniff at is Argentina. You know, they're a little on the warmer and drier side, but in fairness, they're in the midst of planting, and that's exactly what you want to see in the midst of planting, you know, is to not have excessive moisture. So Brazil's planting of their first corn and soybean crop has really gone well. They're actually running ahead of pace. And so with that being the case, you can't really look towards Brazil, especially as they continue to get rainfall, you know, as an area where you can potentially get some sort of bullish weather talk. The only caveat would maybe be far southern Brazil down there by Argentina. You know, there's a small area down there that's on the dry side. But for right now, there doesn't seem to be much concern, if any, as far as global weather's concerned.
If beans fail, can corn hold?
That's a real good question. And that would essentially be a rally for corn, if you will. You know, if beans fail, you know, and corn can hang in there, you know, you might end up getting into some ratios that are pretty interesting. Maybe it gets all the way to 2-1. That's certainly a possibility. But at the same time, it's really tough for one of our commodities to completely divorce themselves from the other one, especially, you know, when you start talking acreage for 25. And so I tell you, it's pretty tough right now when you're looking at 437 and you're looking at $10 beans. I mean, those are basis of the board, and we all know neither one of those look all that rosy with the kind of inputs we've got. So it's going to be a pretty tough situation. Hopefully inputs can adjust a little bit, but as of right now, we're not getting much indication that that's going to be the case.
Thank you much, and have fun at Lucas Stadium tomorrow.
Oh, absolutely. Appreciate it, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net, and we'll set on the panel of analysts to discuss the commodity markets at our Farm Assets Conference coming up the 13th day of December in Champaign at the I Hotel. You can join us there if you'd like, or at one of the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. The Farm Doc team and I will be traveling across the state. We'll kick that off at the Farm Assets Conference. The crop scientists will be on campus with us at the I Hotel, and then myself and the Ag Econ team will head out to Mount Vernon and DeKalb and East Peoria the following week. You can find all the details again on our website at willag.org and look at the agendas. The Farm Doc team at all four, same presentations at all four, a bit more at the Farm Assets Conference with the crop scientist and a couple of other things, including Matt and a commodity market panel to discuss where the markets might be headed in 2025. We hope you will join us at one of those events. but you need to register, and you should do it today. Don't wait. They're coming up pretty quickly, December 13, 16, 17, and 18. Now, up next, we'll hear from another farmer, this time around a pork producer from Nebraska. I caught up with Bill Lucky at last week's National Association of Farm Broadcasting convention in Kansas City. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now here with Bill Lucky. He is a pork producer from Nebraska. Thanks, Bill, for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having an interview, too. This is a great opportunity to tell our story of what we're doing.
So you're with the National Pork Board's Consumer Connect side, the national checkoff for the pork board. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Well, basically, the checkoff program is a USDA program, but it's a mandatory program. All producers who sell pork check off 35 cents for every $100 worth of value. So the National Pork Board is in charge of those funds. We use that for research, promotion, and for education, whether it be consumers or for producers.
Now, for those of you who are listening who aren't farmers and are not familiar with the checkoff, think of it as a 35 cent tax for every $100 that you have in income. Roughly speaking, that's what it is. Now, given that, you have in your list of questions that I might ask, one that I think is really fun, and I'm really interested to see what the answer might be. The question is simply, what are pork's universal truths?
Basically, the way I look at that, the ethical principles, you know, what we do, we produce a safe product, safe food supply. And it's for to protect human health and then also animal well-being, protect the animal, do the right thing for the animals, and then do what's right for our employees and for ourselves when we're on our farms, but also to be a part of the community, to take an active role in our community, helping with benefits or just being part of the school board or the church, take an active role in your community. And, you know, be a face to the rest of our consumers.
I assume because you're here, you actually are very active in your own community in many of those places.
Yeah, we do a lot. Our whole family does a lot of different things. And once you start doing a lot of these things, you get to know a lot of people. But the reason we do it is we enjoy it. It's fun. And you get to tell our story to a lot of different people. So we really enjoy it and have a good time with it.
Tell me about the pigs in the barns on your farm.
Right now, we're a wean to finish operation. We get baby pigs in. Basically, they're 3 to 4 weeks old, weighing 12 to 14 pounds. We got some in on Tuesday. We get another group in today. So my boys are home doing that as we speak, probably. They're getting some more pigs in.
So I've been on enough hog farms. That's got to be the fun time with the pigs, the little piglets. And that the hogs get older, just like adults, they get a little more rambunctious sometimes, but the baby pigs are, they're cute and fun.
Yeah. I have grandkids and that's when we go in and play with the baby pigs. They really enjoy that, you know, catching them. And, it's just a lot of fun to see them reacting with the pigs. Yeah. You know.
So let's talk about one of the issues that pork producers do have. Speaking of your grandkids, a little older than that, but let's talk about the millennials and the Gen Zs. They don't eat as much red meat as older generations have. Is there a disconnect of some sort? Is that a health reason on their part that they're thinking about? Maybe that's not maybe not quite right, or maybe it is. What are you thinking about the issues related to marketing your product, pork, to Gen Z? Or others. And you and I had an interesting discussion about this last night at the table related to, you know, what the dinner table looks like today.
Oh, yeah. Basically, when we look at the new generations coming up, they may not look at pork as center of plate. It may be used as an ingredient. You know, it could be used in tacos. It could be bacon in salad or ham in salad. You know, so these are different ways that new consumers may be consuming our product more, but even when you look at the consumers, we have a segmentation study and how do these consumers really look at meat? How are their prep times? Things like that. Some of them are very confident preparers. They're willing to explore different opportunities in the meat case, and other ones just want to have a meal in front of them and get it done. So there's opportunities out there, whether it be for someone looking for value, someone looking for a new experience, someone who's very experienced in cooking. When you look at cooking type, even you look at the air fryer right now, it seems like that's a very quick way of preparation. So a lot of these people don't have a lot of time or don't dedicate a lot of time for meal prep. This is a great opportunity. And we have to make sure that people understand how to use our product in these new cooking methods.
Yeah, air fryer is one of my favorites. It is part of being able to move quickly, and pork chops are fantastic in an air fryer. They really are. Some interesting things still to talk about with you. How does the Pork Board engage with its value chain partners? What does that mean to gather real-time feedback while developing this brand? This is the question you wanted to answer. I'm interested to see what this answer might be.
Well, when we're going to be introducing a new program, promotional program in March. And how do we know if that works or not? We're going to be working with our packers, with our retailers to see. It's going to be a joint effort. We're not going out at this just as a Pork Board. We're going to incorporate retailers and packers to be a part of this activity. And we can get feedback from them to see once how it's working and if we're able to move the needle. So this isn't just a one organization thing. We're going to utilize our partners in this whole process.
Beef, it's what's for dinner. Pork, the other white meat. Classic. Everybody remembers those. This is a hit you're looking for. What is it that you're hopeful that you can do in the marketing side?
Well, I don't know what we're going to be utilizing. I'm not privy to that, but we are going to introduce that. And what we want to make sure of is that pork is relevant for everyone. You know, there's a part of it in their lifestyle, and we can be very nutritious, affordable, available. There's always pork out there, and we want to make sure that people understand how to prepare that product.
Finally, what do you think is the most misunderstood thing about what you do for a living by the general public as it relates to your daily life as a pork producer?
A lot of people don't understand what goes in these barns. They think that pigs should maybe be raised outside the way grandpa did it, you know, 50, 60 years ago. And we brought the pigs indoors for their benefit and our workers' benefit. I live in Nebraska, so it's pretty hot in the summertime, pretty cold in the wintertime. And these animals, you know, they're pretty comfortable in these buildings, and it works out real well. And I give tours to anybody who wants to come into our operation. You know, give me a call and we can go through the barns and I'll show them what we do in those barns. And some people are pretty amazed at what goes on, how the pigs are taken care of, the air quality in the buildings, how it's all regulated temperature-wise, the feed, how many rations that go into a pig's diet, you know, as they grow and mature, water accessibility all the time. It's really neat just to watch the pigs. If people just watch those pigs, they can tell that they're having fun. They're well taken care of.
Bill Lucky is a pork producer from Nebraska. He's with the Pork Checkoff and the Pork Board. One note as it relates to how and why pigs went into buildings in the 1960s. Part of that was because refrigeration came into place and consumers, more importantly, wanted pork year-round and for it to be easily accessible. Prior to moving into buildings, because of outside weather, it was not possible to breed and have animals that would be in the supply chain every month of the year.
Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Mike Tenor is here from T-Storm Weather. He's the president and CEO there, tstorm.net online. Hello, Mike. Thanks for being with us. What should we cover for the day?
Well, the big thing in the United States is that a major pattern change is coming up. We're going to turn a lot colder once we get into next week. And we're seeing the first taste of that today. Once we get into next week, though, it's going to be a lot different. We'll see a number of Arctic cold fronts slam on through the central U.S. It starts on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week, and it could lead to some snow across the Corn Belt. Now, the major impacts from this would be that winter wheat will start to move more toward dormancy, which has been a real challenge lately because it's been so mild. Well, again, that mild weather is only going to last in the plains for 3 to 4 more days before it turns cold, and then the Corn Belt will turn cold a few days after that. So some big changes are on the way, Todd.
Are we talking about below freezing cold daytime and nighttime temperatures?
For sure. We'll be seeing that along and north of Interstate 80. Temperatures could even fall into the minus zeros in northern areas of the Corn Belt, and especially in the Dakotas and Montana. Now, some of that wheat could be free of snow cover, which would be a little bit of a problem for winter kill threats. But it's the early part of the winter. There should be some snow before it turns cold. And so we're just not overly concerned about that at this point in time.
That would be in the high plains. What about those states like Kansas and Oklahoma? What will temperatures be there?
Well, their high temperatures will only be in the 20s and 30s, with lows in the 10s and 20s, and maybe even some positive zeros across parts of northern Kansas. One of the things we will need to monitor is that some snow is very likely on the way around Wednesday and Thursday of next week in parts of the plains. That should blanket a little bit of the crop, and maybe in some of those areas that turn particularly cold. After that, another system comes out next weekend, or maybe a few days after, sometime within the first 5 days of December. And we think that'll be a period to monitor for a larger winter storm. But in the end, all that would do is blanket the wheat and really protect it from any cold weather.
What else have you been watching across the planet?
Well, it's pretty dry in Argentina and southern Brazil. It's not totally atypical just because we did see some decent rains a few weeks ago, but over the last 2 to 3 weeks it's been pretty dry, and they would benefit from a rain. It looks like that rain event is going to happen once we get into early next week, so we think that even though there are a little bit of concerns out there over the first corn and the soybean crops in these areas, we think they're going to see a pretty nice event next week. And as long as that happens, that will push any concerns into December, even if rain amounts aren't particularly heavy.
Anything else from South America?
Just outside of that, Todd, is that central and northern areas of Brazil, where there are quite a few soybeans produced as well as first crop corn. But they've been seeing some nice rains in recent weeks, and that is very likely going to continue all the way into December. A number of cool fronts will keep on moving into those areas and then dissipate over the few days that follow the arrival of each one. And that's a good recipe for rainfall. So all in all, things are pretty quiet in South America as of today. And we don't expect any real changes in that situation until at least sometime next month.
Thank you much, Mike.
Have a great day, Todd.
You too. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather, where he's the president and CEO, joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.